Welcome to Behind the Curtain, LA Opera's podcast series in which we look deeply at the creative process and explore opera's enduring themes and power to move us. Shauna Lucy and Rachel Willis Sorensen bring the story of La Traviata to life through extensive research and world building, sharing glimpses of their unique rehearsal process and personal stories that shape their artistry with Dr. Christy Brown Montesano. Don't miss this new to LA production, playing now through April 26th. Tickets are available at laopera.org.
Hello and welcome to our listeners. I am Christy Brown Montesano. I am a lecturer in musicology at the Herb Alpert School of Music at UCLA and an affiliated scholar with the Los Angeles Opera. And I'm thrilled today to be joined by two wonderful artists involved with the opera's new production of Traviata. First, director Shauna Lucy.
Great to be with you today.
And soprano Rachel Willis Sorensen, who will be playing Violetta.
Hi.
I'm going to start with Shauna because we're very excited about this new production. Audiences who come here, of course, they're thrilled to see the lineup of great singers we have, but everybody loves the visuals. It's a big part of opera, the total spectacle. It's coming from San Francisco Opera, so you've had a chance to really see it play live. So I'd like to talk about, first of all, your concept for the production, which you have said was explicitly coming from a place of feminism, and also the reactions that you've kind of gotten from the creative team in San Francisco and here and audience members.
Well, thank you for those questions. I love this production of Traviata, and I'm so proud and so excited to bring it to Los Angeles. It is an opera that I love and feel very connected to, and I was so honored when San Francisco Opera asked me to create this new Traviata. It is a story that a lot of opera goers know very well or think that they know very well. And when I delved into the material about the real life of the woman that the opera is based on, I found a treasure trove of very powerful facts about her that then informed both the way I approached the staging and the building of the characters, but also the way our designers, Robert Innes Hopkins, who did the sets and costumes, Michael Clark, who designed the lights, and John Hagenbotham, who joins us as the choreographer, how I led our team to create the world of this incredible woman who in the opera is known as Violetta. Now, I will say that this has some sensitive and intense facts around the life of the woman that the book, the opera, the movies are about. She historically was a young peasant girl in rural France, born to a very alcoholic and very abusive father. The mother had to flee, leaving the young child who at that in her early life was known as Alphonsine. She's gone by many names. She was left with an aunt who had her own children and couldn't care for her, ended up with the father giving her to an old man in the village. Later, he dropped her off in Paris. She became a sex worker in Paris at somewhere around the age between 9 and 11. She was illiterate. So during the course of her adolescence, she not only taught herself how to read and write, she became an incredibly celebrated woman, a courtesan who hosted the most incredible intellectual salons, was a lover of Franz Liszt, really was heralded as the most important woman in Paris in her lifetime, dying at the age of 23 of tuberculosis. But obviously her life story is quite profound and quite moving. And when you bring her life story into the center of the opera, it does flesh out some of the more problematic issues in the opera for a modern audience. So what I'll say is that, you know, often when we experience a Traviata, what we don't understand in the party scenes is that the women in that room are working. They are sex workers, and they are there to get money in order to survive. And so that power dynamic, we bring it right into the forefront. It changes the way Violetta's answer to Germain in Verdi's Act Two, the stakes that are involved in her decision to sacrifice her own self for the man that she loves in order to save his social standing. Because a lot of times, if you don't understand the power dynamics, then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense why she would return to the abusive Baron, why she would sacrifice herself, her life, etc. You know, I'll say that I am an adamant feminist. I identify as a feminist director, and it is a strength of my stage direction, because what it does is that it highlights power dynamics and tension in the piece that otherwise may go unnoticed. When you bring a feminist perspective into great operatic works, these masterpieces that we're so honored to approach and bring to life for a modern audience, what it does is that it makes the music live in a way that I am proud to be a part of. It makes Verdi belong to every person in the audience today. And so I also am a great lover of grand opera, and we are bringing grand opera to this stage. And so what our audiences experience when the curtain rises is the enormity, the amazing ability of opera to tell a story so sumptuously, visuals in terms of our sets, our costumes, our lighting design, our choreography, so that every moment you're on the edge of your seat. And it really, I'm proud to say, we're so lucky to have the cast that we do. They are incredible artists. They bring unbelievable wisdom and heart and joy and soul to their work. And they live these roles in a way that is arresting. And by laying the groundwork for a playground where they can really live and really tell this story, I feel like we can all fly together.
I love that. I wanted to follow up because in learning about Duplessis, Alphonsine, Marie, as she sometimes went by, is it just your understanding of that character? And then maybe we can also bring Rachel into this. Is there something specific you do to show that backstory? Or is it just something that informed you as you were creating kind of the action of the opera itself?
I always think about directing at, you know, the first steps when you're doing all of this research. I'm very fortunate. My sister is also an academic, and her first book was about courtesans in Imperial Russia, 19th century Imperial Russia. And of course, that entire system was based on Marie Duplessis and everything that happened in Paris. And so when I got this directing assignment, she gave me a list of like 35 books to read. And I was like, okay. But, you know, there's this beautiful romance in the research portion of creating a show in which you're gathering as much information as you possibly can. And then you go back to the theatrical telling of what Verdi gives us in the music, right? Because I won't be able to put in every historical detail that I found in my research, right? But we trust that Verdi paints those portraits with the music. Right. And it's just that when we in the rehearsal room are having conversations about how we build each of the interactions, I can say something about the way tuberculosis consumption was sexualized in the 19th century. The way that the approach of that disease and the way it was thought of, as you say in the book, is written about, that helps us then kind of answer some of the ways that we're building the characters and building the way the characters interact. So it's like you put all of these things into your grocery cart, you like mix them all up, and then you just kind of let go and you think that the most important things will stay there and express themselves as you build with your partners in the rehearsal room.
I think a lot of people don't realize that sensitive, serious direction requires a lot more back work. In a way, you're doing all your investigations before you come to the final. So there's a lot more behind the scenes going on in your own head and imagination, and then it has to come to this thing, which I think people don't always realize the dramaturg side of it, you know, all
yes,
of that.
Yes, the dramaturg
right?
side, and then also the stagecraft, like really knowing the language of the stage and how best to highlight and then try to support the artists who are living the drama so that way we build those moments of tension, those moments of release, communicates what we're trying to communicate to our wonderful audience members.
That's wonderful. I have one more for you, Shauna, which I was thinking when you talked about the women working on the poster, if people look on the poster, there's below, there's a thing. And I don't know if people look carefully, but it's all the women in their gowns and they're looking the same direction. And the faces are not smiling. They are not partying. There's a moment of what I found fascinating solidarity and a certain amount of reproach. Did you treat the chorus sometimes in this way where certain statements could be made?
Yeah. So what I'll say is that I believe passionately that opera speaks to every time and every audience. And it has, that's what makes opera great, is that it can do that. And that particular image is one that I care very, very passionately about because especially, you know, you think we're in the United States. It is 2024. Obviously, we've made such inroads as women, but obviously we have not. Obviously, we have not. This is a conversation that we continue to have as, you know, female identifying folks in our society. And so what I'll say is that we have a lot of fun in our party scenes, but we also tell an incredibly important tale inside of one might think, oh, that's about the 19th century. What does it have to do with me? Mm. It has everything to do with us today. And so what I'll say about that image, it's one of my favorite moments in the opera, but people just have to come and see the opera right. And to see how we get there and exactly. Why we get there.
That's the great thing is it really struck me because I know the opera and I was like, that's a very compelling image. And it immediately made me interested in saying, okay, I got to see how we get there and how it hits, right? Because it's very compelling. So turning to Rachel with this same idea, I mean, you now have to help bring this beloved character to life in the sense you manifest for us the voice of Violetta, mm-hmm. but also the embodiment, right? The manifestation. This is not just a voice on its own.
Yeah, actually, if I may, I think the singing is inherent. It's fiendishly challenging, but I would say that bringing the soul to the character is actually drastically more important. I think that ideally, people won't even notice that I'm singing. They'll just feel so many feelings that they'll think, well, beautiful sounds were washing over me, but I hope the singing doesn't even draw any attention to itself. Although, I mean, at that end of Act One, it probably is likely to do so given how difficult.
Sempre Libre is going to take us all into, you know, but that's part of the fun of opera.
It is. That's what's unique about it. That's what's unique about it. In this soundscape that we create, you get to take for granted that this is normalcy, that people actually just express themselves in this acute way. I have to say, every time Shauna opens her mouth and speaks, I want to applaud because I love everything she says. And it's like when I was 18 years old or 17 and I learned of the concept of opera at all, this is exactly what I thought it would be like. It's a dream. It's an absolute dream come true. Every day in rehearsal, I don't want to go home. I've loved the experience. I can't tell you because of the insights that she offers and the freedom and the trust that we're given, but within this very profoundly well-organized structure that she did, exactly what you said, to come with all this work, this respect for the source material. It's been such a gift to do it. And so I feel free to live out the character. If we think about the structure that Shauna has created, and then you feel, well, what would I feel saying these words? What would it take for me to say this text within this construct? What would I feel? And then I just feel those things while we're doing it. And I have found myself moved absolutely to tears in the rehearsals multiple times, multiple scenes, just so moved by these characters. And also the way that Shauna so cleverly fleshed out some of the tertiary characters that otherwise you just forget about. I mean, it's profound. We've created an entire world, a really complex structure. And I think it's true. It should enable the audience to really live it with us and feel along with these characters in a way that I am so thrilled to be doing. This is a really, really special Traviata. It's really special. And obviously I'm biased, but I'm so pleased with the work we've been
doing. I feel the same way. It is incredibly special. Rachel brings her whole self every minute that she is on stage, and it is an absolute privilege and honor to do this.
Aww.
Yes.
I'm loving this. I mean, to have that kind of sense of connection with the creative cast, but with also, Shauna, your vision. Kind of you've thrown this out, And I love, Rachel, that you're talking about the freedom that you feel both pleasantly contained because or supported. It's
definitely support, absolutely.
And you don't want to be just thrown out there with it. There's a nice place. And then it gives you that freedom to like work.
It makes me so happy because the way I approach directing, my job is to create a spiritual playground. Like I have to come like with the construction and I like build it. And then we all come in and we play games together. And then I leave and the singers remake what the playground is. They show me parts of it I didn't know about. So that I'm like, yes, it's working. It works. It allows Rachel and the entire cast to live and shine and like really take to the stage, which is like what, when I'm an audience member, that's what I want to experience. And so I'm so over the moon.
I love that you just said that. And that's another thing that's really been unique for me about this process. Shauna talks about the audience in a funny way. Can I tell them about Mrs. McGillicuddy? So she says Mrs. McGillicuddy as this general audience member, who I think is a character from I Love Lucy. I'm not
mad.
But we always talk about Mrs. McGillicuddy and what is she going to experience and how can we pitch the action toward her in such a way that feels natural but also is legible to her? And how can we make the story clearer and clearer and more legible so that people can really experience it? I am so thrilled with that. I'm so thrilled with the fact, because that's who I'm doing it for. I think when I chose to be a singer, I really wanted to express the warmth that I feel in my heart for people. I feel this magic happen in a performance setting generally is possible to somehow build a bridge between my heart and their heart. I mean, it's not always possible, but very often I feel this. I don't know, it's metaphysical. I can't measure it exactly, but I know that when I'm connected to the audience, I can really sense it. I can draw them in. It's something I really can sense.
I've been teaching an introduction to opera class. I've taught it twice. This is a general ed class. You have to do an evaluation where they say, how much was your interest when you started and how much when you finished? And it always goes up. And that's really the point. So I love the fact that the audience
They're playing a role even in the rehearsals. Yeah.
It's very relational, right?
Yes.
And it extends to that place, which is fabulous.
I want to say really quick, if I may, that in this case, we're just doing our best to really reach people and really help them to understand and clarify some things within themselves. I think that this art form can be at least as effective as therapy. I'm just saying. I certainly feel that way.
It can be very cathartic, just like,
yes. And watching someone die, so Violetta dies in the end, it's really deeply moving the way it was written. If we do it successfully, which I think we absolutely will, knock on wood. This is not wood. Oh, no! Anyway, I think the beauty of that, inviting people to contemplate their own mortality and realize what a gift it is to be alive. You know, it's a gift to be alive, even though life is challenging. And so when you watch someone like Violetta have to die, I mean, it's a strange sort of healthy sensation to be grateful for the life you get to live.
Very much so. And in fact, what I worry about sometimes with a character like Violetta, like so many of the women in grand 19th century opera, is that it's very sacrificial. This is not sentimental. She has a health issue that is in fact deadly even for the most well-off people. Her work, her circumstances are not helping that situation. But we're not seeing in this case, let's just put it, we're not seeing a man kill a woman in the usual sense. We might think of it as patriarchy hastening her death through circumstances by the very fact that she ended up in a courtesan position. But ultimately, one of the things about Violetta is her fragility from the beginning. Like she's fighting to stay alive.
Look,
right?
I like to say there are no losers in opera except the soprano.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, I think that there is real criticism and true meditation on how opera is a great paradigm to examine the universal need to destroy the female form. Mm-hmm. Because that is something that is reviewed over and over in this incredible art form in so many ways, be it disease, be it violent death, be it suicide. But I think that coming together and the catharsis that Rachel is talking about in Violetta's death, about the way that she dies, the way she releases herself and has this moment of like true joy before she goes. You know, I'm very informed by my time spent in a Russian theater institute, which is where I did my master's degree in stage direction. And when Stalin took the churches away in the early Soviet days, he said they can go to the theater. And the Soviet citizens did. That's where they came together to experience kind of communal meditation on things that we're talking about like the way female forms are destroyed. And so it may be that in a time when return to the theaters, audiences are sluggish to come back, but we are faced with true existential questions as humankind that we have a role to play in the living theater to say, come and experience Violetta's death, because maybe then we're kind of reaching some other spiritual existence of our audience members to contemplate this larger destruction that we're also experiencing as humans. So that is not a definitive answer, but one to say, like, when we come together and reflect, we're talking about this personal interrelationship with Violetta, but maybe we're also touching on a more profound human topic as well.
And I think your background will inform that, because I was thinking about this opera again. You know, the scene with Father Germain is such a strange scene because he comes in one
it's
way.
It's a killer. It's
right?
a killer.
In one way, he's coming in as like, hello, I'm, you know, patriarchal figure. I'm going to tell you you're a sex worker and my son's a good boy and you're ruining everybody's life. And that. But at some point, he actually sees her.
As a person.
As a person, and becomes...
To his great surprise.
To his great surprise. And you don't see that often, a kind of moment where that figure representing societal norms of behavior, this is what we judge to be, suddenly have a kind of comeuppance. And it's...
A change of heart.
A change of heart.
It never occurred to me until right now as you say that, but it's true. There's this other vein, which is so beautiful, that... Germain has a change of heart.
He has a change
he
of heart.
He walks in. You talked about that a lot, Sean, in rehearsal, that when he walks in, he has this very clear expectation what he's going to find. She has utilized the patriarchy to absolute full effect, and she's crawled her way to the top of it somehow, coming from nothing, from abject poverty, and now she's the absolute toast of Paris. How has she done this? She is one of those women who can be so resorbed into the patriarchy that she actually utilizes it to her own benefit, which is another interesting thing. But it's true. Germain changes his mind. He says, quai moldi, like what a way of being. I'm surprised by the dignity of this woman. I expected to find a prostitute, and I find someone whose dignity actually demands my respect. So that's yet another interesting story in this opera.
And it's the moment of parenthood as well. The idea that I think in your essay, Shauna, you talk about, that she's struck by a father who would actually kind of try to protect his daughter in some ways. Now, I think that there's a certain amount where you could say protecting the family name, protecting, but from Violetta's position, that doesn't even matter. It's just somebody acting in a way that would for the benefit of this other woman, of this younger woman, presumably, but more or less the same age. And it made me think about also parenthood. I was reading about Marie Duplessis, and I guess she did have a child.
Yes, she did.
Right?
And who died.
So it brings up this idea, because that's never, of course, talked about. And mothers are also few on the ground for the world of opera. On the stage, not many mother characters.
Oh, no, it's true.
When they appear, they're usually problematic or incidental. Full disclosure, I am also a mother. I have three now adult kids. I had two kids while writing a dissertation. And I felt very lonely with that experience because
yes,
that was not something happening in musicology. And both of you are balancing this creative work, this very demanding work, because you're not in a single place, you know, that people don't realize. If you're a LA Philharmonic player, Disney Hall's, unless you're going on tour, Disney Hall's where you'll be. But when you're in the opera world as a singer or as a stage director, you're traveling. So I wondered if you could just talk about being mothers and creatives.
Well, my kids are here now. They came to visit me for their spring break from school, all the way from Copenhagen, where we live generally. And I'm not going to lie, it is acutely challenging. This is the worst part. I am also divorced. So being a single mother, trying to navigate this business, I guess you know, our life happens the way that it shakes out. You know, I don't know that there's so much we can ultimately, I mean, I love my children more than I love singing, I would argue, but I also love singing almost as much, you know? So having, there was a period during my divorce where I thought I'm going to have to give it up in order to be with the children. But ultimately that actually couldn't have worked because I need to provide for them financially. So this is my most marketable skill. And I find myself in this position where I'm pulled by these conflicting stewardships, my motherhood and my stewardship to music and to singing and to the audiences. And these opposing forces, sometimes it can be incredibly lonely and unpleasant. But that said, I think that even those awkward sensations contribute to the art that I'm producing that I love in a more profound way since having children than I did before. And I have more compassion for a variety of circumstances that otherwise maybe I would have just quickly and easily judged. I think my children also are afforded privileges that otherwise they wouldn't be. They have been in holy theaters all over the world to listen to incredible orchestras, and they have this enrichment, this access to something that I didn't have as a child. And it's,
right,
you could argue, another benefit to their education, even though it's true they have to go without me as much as like 60% of the time. I mean, I work as hard as I can to visit them between performances. Even if I have 2 days off, I am always going to Copenhagen. It's harder from the US, but luckily they had this spring break right in the middle of this trip. And so they flew to me. Like, the housekeeping of my personal situation is that the kids come to me for the 24% of the calendar year they are free from school. It's quite high from Denmark. And I go to them between contracts and whenever I can between performances. So essentially it's about half the time. So I get to be with them about half the time, and it's not enough. I would want more than 100% of the time if I could, because they're growing up way too fast. In fact, this morning I was scolding them. Stop growing up. Why are you growing up so fast? You know, I mean, we had a laugh, ha ha, but it's terrible in a way. Like, they don't reach to hold my hand as much as they used to. And also I had mine very close together. I have a 10-year-old daughter and twin sons who are 8, and she wasn't 2 when they were born. So it's all, they're all the same age. Like, what, they're going to leave at the same time. I don't know. Life is equally short and long. I mean, there's more, knock on wood again, but I there's so much time and so many beautiful things to experience. And I know that the life I'm giving them is a weird one. It is a weird one. It is, I don't know anyone else who's led quite exactly this life, but it is a good one. And I know that I'm working very hard to make sure they're resilient enough to withstand the periods of separation. And I work so hard on this relationship, and it remains very, very close. I'm very close to my children. I love them. And I'm also sorry for all the hardships they will face as a consequence of my choices. But how could I not sing? I mean, how could I not do it? Also, it's such a, there are no guarantees. I don't know how long it will last. I don't know how long I will be allowed to do this. So if someone says, please come to Los Angeles Opera and sing Violetta Valerie in La Traviata, what am I going to turn it down? No, it's a glorious opportunity. And I want also my children to have permission to follow their own outrageous dreams.
Yes.
Yes.
And they will have that because they watch me doing it.
Yes.
You go, Shauna, you go.
Yeah, oh my God. Well, you know, I love everything you just said. So my daughter, she'll be 3 in June. And like Rachel, I'm also a single mom. And I am also a general director. I am proud to be the general director of Opera San Jose. So I like to say, why do two? What an impossible job when you could do two. So
or 3. Single mom's the other one.
Hey, ooh. But we don't talk about moms in opera enough.
No.
And that's something that I'm very passionate about at Opera San Jose. We're very committed to supporting mothers on our staff, to supporting mothers in our casts, to supporting mothers backstage. What mothers need, we are here for in spades. And that is a culture we are building. We have actively chosen it. And we are doing it. And we want to support all parents because it is the most wonderful job. It is the most difficult job. It absolutely breaks you, and it's supposed to. And it is a totally unusual childhood. And it is, you know, one that I hope always to make her as confident as possible and as resilient.
Right.
Right? That she has art as part of her expression, whatever that is. You know, I'm, of course, really pushing for her to be in the WNBA and right. and push for pay equity so that she can support me in her old age. So that's, you know, my long-term goal. But I have to express myself as an artist. It's incredibly important. It totally informs the way I approach stage direction because my feminist approach as a stage director is totally informed by my role as a mother.
Yeah.
And I don't do operas where there are no children. Like, there are no children at Traviata because that would be even weirder. Mm-hmm. But the absence of children in the piece, it says something kind of profound. They are yes. spoken of, but we don't see them because mm-hmm. Alfredo and Violetta will never have children together.
Right.
And that is one of the great heartbreaks of both of those characters. It's important that children are present. And I feel very passionately about having people bring their kids to rehearsal. You don't have childcare? Bring your child to the opera. Bring your child to the opera. They are welcome in any rehearsal that I have any kind of responsibility for. Because yeah. children are chaos. They are absolute chaos.
Yes, true.
And you know what theater making is? Chaos.
It is.
So bring it on.
Control is an illusion, right? So if we can just sort of relax our focus a bit and make a wider space, then beautiful things happen. Yes. Beautiful creativity is born in chaos. So I agree with that. And it's I have to say, when my children arrived from Copenhagen, I had to go pick them up from the airport. And I was really nervous because I didn't know how am I going to work this out. We probably have rehearsal. I talked to Shauna about it. I'm going to cry. I'm so sorry. She was so lovely. She said, why is it that women or everyone were expected to parent like we have no job and do our job like we have no children? Mm-hmm. And somehow a lot of people find themselves in that, the crosshairs of those two lives. And why do we not accommodate them? And she said those beautiful things also to me in the rehearsal room. And they accommodated my need to drive to the airport and pick up my children. And I felt so supported. What a healthy way of looking at it. Because my children are an enhancement to my artistry.
That's right.
Being a mother to my children is informing the way that I'm telling this story in such a positive way. The wisdom that I have gained by having them and learning from them.
And it does change who you are. I'm glad we have been able to bring this in because this is another kind of thing that people forget is that you, Rachel, you, Shauna, you are people creating art. And maybe this is the scholar side of me. The reason I got into musicology wasn't for a bunch of empty facts and analysis. I was deeply interested in the stories of the people that we're reading about, the names. I hope that our listeners will also appreciate seeing this side, including motherhood. So I want to thank you both for an extraordinary conversation and one that has deeply moved me also as a woman, as a scholar, as an opera lover. So thank you again.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us. It was such a pleasure.
Don't miss this new to LA production, playing now through April 26th. Tickets are available at laopera.org. If you enjoyed listening to LA Opera's Behind the Curtain, subscribe and leave a rating or review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen. Don't forget to share this episode with your friends on your favorite social media, and we'll see you at the opera.